Ron and Anian.
I want you to think differently about repairs going forward because everything is changing.
You left from Frisco in your Rambler, the radiator running dry. I've never been much of a gambler and had a preference to fly.
The Car Doctor. If the shoes are rusted against the drum, then the self-adjuster is going to get sloppy where it wedges itself between the two shoes at the bottom, and that adjuster is just going to eventually pick up enough slop that it'll, kind of just sort of wobble around.
Okay. Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
I had the pleasure this week of doing a water pump on an 09 Chevy Malibu four-cylinder. And I thought to myself, my God, how this industry has changed. Like, I don't see it every day, right? In 1973, when I was young and dirt was invented, and God was a teenager, I got to do my first water pump at suburban Texaco in Franklin Lakes, New Jersey. Billy let me do it on a Saturday afternoon. Well, Saturday morning. It took till afternoon. And I remember it took me about 2 hours because it was the first one I had ever done, you know, really professionally, as it were. I was 16 years old at the time, and in between pumping gas and walking out and pumping gas and coming back and turning the bolt and pumping gas, and it took a while. Eventually, I had it down to where on a small block Chevy, the mainstay of the General Motors car line for so many years, I could do a water pump in about, 30 to 45 minutes, depending upon what was in the way and what argued with you and what didn't get along and so on. And I thought, boy, this business, it's so simple. An 09 Chevy Malibu has a 2.4 liter four-cylinder in it. The water pump, I knew I was in deep when the first time I saw one of these, and this was just sort of a refresher, when I had to get out the special tool that holds the balance shaft sprocket in place for the timing chain, because you have to hold the sprocket where it's supposed to be so you can disconnect the water pump from it, because it's water pump driven off the balance shaft for the timing chain at the back of the motor, in the back of the motor. So you're working with mirrors and flashlights in order to get this thing apart. And you say to yourself, this is the absolute best GM's got? This is how they designed this? It's really, it's nuts and bolts, and it's not the worst job in the world, but you just sit there and say, is anybody thinking in terms of someday we're going to have to repair some of this? And I had to take the water inlet tube out, which went under the exhaust manifold, which really amazed me. They mount, because the water pump's in the rear, they run the water feed tube to the pump off the back of the block directly under the catalytic converter and the exhaust manifold. Does anybody realize how hot a catalytic converter gets on in July when you're driving along or stuck in traffic and you're sitting there idling, and how hot it's got to have an effect on the coolant? I can't imagine it not, but they did. The heater hoses, which were attached to the water tube, which I had to take out to get the water pump out to get the part repaired, the car repaired, the heater hoses had actually melted themselves. They had congealed onto the heater tube on the nipples that I had to slice them with a razor knife and then peel them like a banana to get them off the nipples. It's just, and I'm looking at that catalytic converter and I'm looking at all the heat and I'm looking at the lack of air and thinking, how hot does this poor little engine have to run? And then everybody blames the car, right? Everybody's talking about what a bad motor it is because they do have their failures. They go through rings and oil consumption issues. And, you know, and I couldn't help but notice the grill opening is probably, I think it was 20 inches by 4 inches. I mean, there's no grill opening. There's no airflow through the engine compartment. And you have to sit there and say to yourself, how hot does this poor little engine have to get? From 45 minutes to half a day, what a bunch of engineers they've got over there at GM. My friend Chris, who we've had on the show from time to time, and we sit and we talk, and I think Chris is right. His theory is that the engineers come in, they have a liquid breakfast, They get started. They design the car. They don't put the plans in. Then they go out, they have a liquid lunch, and then they come back and they think about it three more times and go, yeah, let's do it. Let's just see what happens. Because it's got to be. It's just got to make sense. There's no rational thought process that I can imagine. But yeah, just something to look forward to. If you want to see something neat, here's what you can do with YouTube. Go out to YouTube and Google search Chevy Malibu water pump replacement and watch where that water pump sprocket is. You know, when you're trying to take the bolts out of the sprocket that hold the water pump to it, you have to be careful not to drop the bolt, because if you drop the bolt, it falls into the engine. And all they had to do was design the tool so that when the tool butted up against the sprocket, that there wasn't an opening in the well, in the hole. They could have just made it all the way through. They couldn't even design the tool right. They couldn't even design the tool to work on the thing. Just give me another 60 years. I want to go work for a car company and straighten them out. I really do. Okay, that's my opening rant. Let's get over and talk to Rod in Washington State. 06 Tundra and some transmission issues, maybe, sort of, kind of. Rod, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. All warmed up and ready to go. How can I help? Yes, sir.
I took my truck in for routine maintenance a couple of weeks ago. They'd put in a second replacement timing belt and second replacement water pump, alternator belt, spark plugs, and a transmission service. The truck actually ran well when I took it in. It was just routine maintenance, and it hasn't run right since I picked it up. Sometimes it'll just stall at a traffic light, and this morning I was saying that I couldn't get it to go over 10 miles an hour. And then sometimes if you're sitting there idling at a traffic light, it'll surge and want to leap forward. I'm not a mechanic, but I think there's some kind of an electronic issue going on.
Well, let's not do that. Let's ask some questions. Let me ask some questions of you, Rod.
Sure.
Any check engine light on?
Yesterday, yes.
Okay. And you didn't have that experience prior to this work being done?
No.
All right. Have you been back to them yet?
I have an appointment for Monday morning.
Okay. So rule number one, what's the check engine light, right? That's going to be your first question. The second thing, if I was looking at this, my second comment would be, I want to look at vitals. I always think in terms of vitals. They had enough apart. They were basically all over that vehicle. You know what? I love those kind of jobs, and I hate those kind of jobs. They had everything apart. So, you know, I always like to go in and look at vitals. I love to look at fuel trim on a vehicle like that. You know, is fuel trim anywhere near normal? I love to look at mode 6. Mode 6 data is the behind-the-scenes information that the computer uses to calculate and generate trouble codes. And it will tell you what tests are failing and what tests are passing before it actually sets a fault code for that. Does the brake pedal seem okay? Does it seem like it has a hard brake pedal? Like you're losing
power? Yeah, I don't have any issue with the brakes.
But you're not losing power assist? You have enough brake reserve?
No.
Okay. I was thinking maybe they had a timing belt off a tooth somehow, and although that would probably affect it much more than it is, but, you know, something maybe affecting engine vacuum and creating a brake booster issue. You know, listen, this could be something as simple as they've got an air intake duct loose, and it's created a fuel trim issue. It's creating a surge to... They've assembled something wrong, too. It's got nothing to do with anything they did. But until you get a code and start to gather some of the data, you really don't know. Is this your regular shop? You've dealt with these guys before?
Yeah, it's the dealer.
Okay.
It's the Toyota dealer.
All right. And you've dealt with them before and you've had good results?
Yes.
All right. Stay calm. You know, remind yourself of that. Remind them of that. Hey, listen, I know how this looks. You know, I would just tell them point blank. I know how this looks. Look, this could be something you did. This could be something unrelated. Let's just go in and do an exploratory. Tell me what's going on. I need my truck fixed, you know? And then see what they say. It's a tough spot for them to be in, but they might have induced this. It was like that the moment you pulled out of there?
No, it actually ran fine for about, well, I picked it up at midday, and it was fine for the rest of the day, and then started acting up the next day.
Okay. you know, something loosened, something fell off, something wasn't plugged on right, an animal crawled up inside the mass airflow sensor overnight, you know. Right? I mean, listen, I've seen it all. You know, the fact that you have a relationship with them is the strongest denominator you got going for you, so let's try to utilize it. So,
okay.
Do me a favor, call me back next week, Rod. I'd really like to hear what this story was. I think it would be good for everyone to hear that, you know, things go wrong in repair shops, and sometimes it may or may not be mechanic related. Sometimes it's just the nature of the beast. Here, I'll tell you one real quick, and then I got to go. Tom's already looking at me. We had to put, how hard could it be to put three bulbs in a Hyundai? All right. We had a customer on Wednesday. They had multiple bulbs out, a high beam, a directional, and a parking light. They brought it in. We changed the bulbs while they waited, sent them on their way. Everything worked. Everything was good. The bulbs were clearly bad. They had black spots on them. Boom, done. Half hour later, the phone rings. Hey, Ron, the right directional is not working again. No problem. Come on by. They come by. I look at it. The bulb is good. I tap the socket. It starts working. I get out my little jeweler file. I start scratching the contact down on the bottom of the socket. Even though it didn't look bad, I just scratch away at some of the whatever surface that's built up on that copper tab, because I see this on Hyundais and Kias, that they get some kind of a film on them and they will affect bulb contact. And I, even when they're switches, I've run into this before, and it worked fine. It's been working fine. I haven't gotten a phone call or a text since. So, you know, were we at fault? Did we do something wrong? No, we just, you know, we were the last guys to touch it. So therefore we're obligated to fix it. It's not a sign of incompetence. It's the nature of the beast to a large degree. You know, but their attitude, the attitude of the repair shop, our attitude was positive and we'll fix it. The attitude of the dealer will be an indicator of what's really going on here. Remember this, my last thought. You know what? You ever been married, Rod? Rod?
Yes.
You ever been married?
Yeah.
Isn't it great when things are going well and then all of a sudden there's a problem, right? You know, all relationships and human interaction is based on not when things are going well, but when things are going bad, and how do you work to overcome it and resolve it? And that's what these guys have to do. So,
yes.
All right. Give them the shot. Let's see what they do with it. Call me back. You take good care, Rod. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
He drives that way, but when it comes to fixing cars, Ron has car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
Hey, let's get over to John in Florida, 74 Buick, and some questions about the charging system. Yes, John, how can I help?
Hey, years ago I bought cars and they're cheap, and I had this 174 Buick GS that I bought, and I've been sitting in my garage all this time, and now I'm retired, and I got it going again, redid everything, gas tank was rotted out, brakes, and all that normal stuff. Anyway, it's a 74 late model, and on the alternator, you have your main wire that goes to the battery.
Right.
Then you got your one and two that clip in.
Right, and one goes
to the gauges. Now, the other one, I always thought that went back to the power.
Right, that should be battery.
Yeah, and it's grounded. It's hooked to the ground. It runs right to the ground.
That sounds wrong.
Yeah, it sounds crazy to me.
Right.
But I started it up and got it going, run pretty good after I changed it and wiped out cam in it. And I get 0.65 volts coming off that grounded wire. Anyway, I disconnected it and hooked it up back to battery. Now I'm getting 14.5 out of it, so I don't understand why it was grounded.
I don't understand that either. You know, one of the concerns on an older vehicle is, you know, you start to think about it, and that vehicle's 50 years old, the wiring harness. You know, if you're going to restore it and have it reliable, they're cheap enough. You may want to buy an engine compartment wiring harness and just replace it. Because
the car doesn't have many miles on it.
Right.
It's a stage one motor.
Right.
And but that looked factory to me. I looked at it and looked like it'd been there for 40 years.
My memory, and it's funny, you know, it's the same wiring diagram as the Monte Carlo I'm working on. It's a blue and white wire at that little square. You have a rectangular plug at the back of the alternator, right?
Yeah, the ground wire was a black wire, though.
Right. Which ground wire?
It came off the one and two. And you got your clip in. You're one and two, right?
Yeah, I got a clip in. Mine's blue and white, and blue was battery back to the hot, and then white went back through to the gauges.
White one to the gauge.
Yeah.
But the other one was black, and that's the one that was grounded.
I've never
seen. Make any sense to me?
Yeah, and I've never seen one that was black. To be honest with you, John.
I would factory.
I would match that up against the wiring diagram. 74. My mom had a 74 Monte Carlo, and I remember that small block Chevy, same basic alternator, and it was blue white, and the heavy lug wire going to the back of the alternator for the battery was red, like it always has been.
Right. Yeah.
So you know, one of the things, and like I was saying, I try not to unresolve the way somebody did something 50 years ago. You know what? It could look like it was factory after sitting for 20 years. Maybe they put a right clip on it. I don't know. You don't know how people think.
Yeah,
I mean, you're proving whatever they did as being wrong because you wired it the way you remembered it to be, and it works fine, right?
Be, yeah.
And it works fine.
Yeah, I get 14.5 volts now.
Right. So why would they do it? You know, people do funny things. Maybe they used the car for drag racing and they were looking for a way to disable the charging system because they thought they'd get more horsepower out of it. You know, I've seen people do some really stupid things in my career.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know how they're thinking. A company by the name of M&H Wiring out of California, because there's only a few companies making wiring harnesses now, and a lot of them buy it from just one or two sources. M&H, to my knowledge, I've always bought from them as the direct source. M&H Wiring, I believe, M&H Vintage, M&H Wiring, California. I bet you the harness for that engine compartment isn't $100, and it would eliminate 50 years of sitting and, you know, potential of animal intrusion and everything else. So if you're going to keep the car and drive the car and enjoy the car, you know, I did engine compartment wiring harnesses in the Monte. Obviously, I did it in the 55. I tend to do it in all the cars that I restore and put back to life based on the age because everything is now so old. And, you know, if I don't know the history on the car, I don't know what somebody was thinking or how they were operating or what their mind was capable of. You're better off replacing it. It's cheap insurance.
Yeah. So I'll probably replace it. And I've replaced everything else. I mean, brakes and, you know, everything possible on it, replace it.
The runs
good. That was the only mystery I had.
Yeah, and you know what? You may never get an answer to it, but the fact that you put it back to the way you thought it was going to be and it worked tells you that you were right and whatever they were doing was wrong. But you, like I said at the beginning of this conversation, you can't unravel a mind the way a mind works sometimes. You can't make sense out of an irrational thought process. I say it at the shop a half a dozen times a week. I'm thinking of patenting that saying. So, all right, sir.
Okay.
So, you be well. Enjoy the car.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Yeah, you know, and there's no point in trying to make sense out of an irrational thought process. It's, if you know how it's supposed to work and you make it work like that, you know, and then all of a sudden you'll come across somebody that says, well, you know, my father told me to do it that way on a car similar to this, but not on this exact car. And you realize that, you know what? It's a scientific approach done in an unscientific manner. So replace the wiring harness. It'd be your best bet and keep it the safest. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're coming back right after this. Don't go away. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's 24/7 phone number. Let's go over to David in Iowa. Is this who I think it is? David, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Yes. How are you, David?
I'm well. Yourself?
Oh, good. What's going on?
Well, about 3-4 months ago, my Audi 2000 Audi A8 started to miss right on startup, and it would go away in about 30 seconds. And I was having a bit of a coolant leak. So I took it to the shop. They pulled the plug on 3, and sure enough, there's some water in there. He says, yeah, we're going to have to do a head gasket and get the head planed, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, let's dump a can of K-Seal in. So we dumped a can of K-Seal in or a bottle and solved the problem. Well, last week ago yesterday, one of our sister FM stations has this classic car show up in Waterloo. Oh, my girlfriend and I go up, and you know that A8, it can get up and go, right?
Oh, yeah. It'll get up, go, and gone. Yep.
I mean, that car's 21 years old. Smooth as quietest ride I've ever had.
Yep.
I mean, it's a great car if you maintain it. But so we're coming back, and she likes to go fast. And, you know, we did a don't tell anybody, two-lane blacktop, flat, you know, you could see for miles.
Put your foot through the headlight.
I don't think I went over 115, but then we're about 6 miles from home. I go around some curves and I punch it, and it starts missing. It has no power. And I'm thinking, oh, Lord, no. That's the head gasket. So I have AAA take it to the shop, and turns out it was a coil pack. It wasn't a head gasket. But in the meantime, I'd called you to get your idea, but it was too late when I called. And I talked to K-Seal. Can I dump in another bottle of K-Seal? And he said, yeah, you can do one more. So, but it turned out to be a coil pack.
Right,
so.
And listen, so look at that. You had two problems with different repairs that were both, one was a coolant leak that was K-Seal, a head gasket issue, and the other was a misfire that gave a symptom of a possible head gasket failure or a coolant, you know, seep problem from a head gasket. It turned out to be a coil, you know?
Yeah, it did.
Imagine
and
that.
What threw me was I put the scanner on it. I don't have much of a scanner. I haven't figured out the one that actually works for Audi yet, but it showed a misfire on one, a misfire on two, and a random misfire.
Right.
So I cleared it out, and it ended up just being a misfire on one, and that's where the coil pack was.
You know, it's and as those cars age, if those are the original coils in that car, you may want to consider just replacing them as a set, just because it's 21 years old now, and you know, it's more economical to do it all at once. You know, do a set of plugs, do a set of coils, and be done with it. Especially if you're planning to keep the car, you know.
I'm going to keep it till, you know, I think I'll get 500 out of it.
Sure. Yeah,
they
run forever. I should also say, full disclosure, David, this is you from Iowa, right? We talked a couple of weeks ago about something. I forget what it was. You work for one of our affiliate stations up there in Iowa, right, that carries a show. Yeah. Is that who this is, if I'm thinking about this right?
Yeah, that's right. And the guy that fetched some ice cream 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah. So here's a guy, Tom. I just want to point this out to Tom. Here's a guy, Tom, that believes in the show so much. He came out of retirement. And he's got a job selling radio advertising so he can sell the Car Doctor. Now, how do you like them apples?
I'm impressed.
Tom,
like
Ron has. Yeah, you talk about your friend that you think is a savant. You amaze me. Somebody will call you about, you got a call once on a 98, I don't remember, Lincoln or something. Some old woman had this car forever, and she was having troubles with it starting. And you're like, you know, I think it's in the cylinder lock. And if I remember right, the hot on that's black with a blue chaser. And I'm like, God, this guy remembers every car he ever worked on.
Yeah, but you know what the issue is? When I met Tim McGraw, I didn't know it was him, and I blew it. we told that story at the top of the first hour. You'll hear it at some point if you listen to the podcast about the time I met Tim McGraw in New York. He knew who I was. He wanted to invite. Well, he did. He invited my wife and I to his show. And I'm thinking it was Tug McGraw because I'm so, you know, I'm just a goofball like that. I'm like, why is this guy that plays for the Mets wearing a baseball a cowboy hat? Turns out it's Tim McGraw. Tug was his father. I just, you know. You don't know Tim McGraw by chance, do you, David? You seem to know everybody else.
No, but if I did, I'd tell him.
You know,
the story.
I'm trying to get him to maybe do a virtual appearance at my daughter's wedding, but that's a whole other conversation. So Tom found out it's only $500,000. That would be quite a bit of advertising that we would have to do in order to generate that. Maybe
that's
cheaper
than Elton John.
Maybe I could start a GoFundMe page. So, anyway, David, always a pleasure, sir. I still say you make some of the made some of the best ice cream. Your strawberry was just out of sight. It was just the best. Yeah. So, but
you know, that's the joys of entrepreneurism. You know, just because you make the best product doesn't mean that things are going to work out the way you think they will. You know. But hey, you know, if you don't give it a shot, you never know.
Well, you know, if you don't give it a shot, one of the things I always say is, if you want to see God laugh, tell him your plans. So, and just kind of truck on through. So, just taking the ride, brother. Just taking the ride. You be well, David. Always appreciate the conversation.
Me too, Ron. Thanks.
Take good care. Let's pull over, take a pause, Tom. I'm Ron Anini in the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this.
Well, this car is automatic. It's systematic. It's hydromatic. Why, it's greased lightning.
Greased lightning.
We'll get some overhead lifters and four barrel quads, oh yeah.
Welcome back. We're on the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900 is the 24/7 phone number. Give us a shout. Leave a message if we're not on air, and we'll be glad to call you back and get you in the next live queue. 855-560-9900. Got a letter in front of me from Bill in Charlottesville, Virginia. As he says, a longtime Car Doctor listener. I listen to your excellent radio show live when possible and also on podcast. Bill. And the topic of his email is fixing one automotive problem leads to solving another that I didn't know I had. And he starts out, the radiator on my 2005 Ford Focus was replaced by a body shop years ago after an unforeseen encounter with a deer. The replacement radiator has two unused bungs, 3/8 and 5/8 that need to be capped off in my application. The original radiator did not have these. Approximately every 2 years, I have to replace the coolant bypass caps as they crack and leak coolant when I least expect it. The dormant coolant bypass caps should not be sold as such since they fail way too often. Product reviews agree. They do. And you know what? Dormant does have some of their issues, and they do respond to that. I think I know the caps you're speaking of, and I believe they've corrected that, and they're making a better product at this time. That's one thing I give them credit for. They do, when they find a problem, they re-engineer it and work it until it's solved. This time I purchased high temp coolant and burping the system. I connected my Actron CP960. 9690, I'm sorry, scanner in order to monitor coolant temp. Focus is run hot. I'm not sure if they're looking at a true coolant temp sensor or just the cylinder head temp, so I want it to be as safe as possible. While looking at the PIDs, I always look at long-term and short-term fuel trims as you advised. Lo and behold, long-term fuel trim was plus 24%. No mil set, no check engine light set, and no pending codes. However, I believe you said Ford's avoid tripping a code and will keep compensating for a problem up to just below the trip limit. Right. Well, it won't by OBD2 law, I believe 25 or 35% depends on vehicle application as to where they will trip a code. So you could have 24.6% fuel trim, and if it sets at 25, it's not setting. Bill continues, I was pressing on a hose above the air intake manifold and noticed a change in sound, a hiss when I depressed it. It wasn't that this hose was bad, but by pushing down on it, I was actually also depressing a vacuum cap mounted to the top of the manifold. Upon further inspection, the cap was severely cracked on the sides, which wasn't easily visible when the cap is installed onto the nipple. I replaced it with a high-temp vacuum cap to correct the leak. There are a lot of sounds made by a running engine, and the hissing wasn't obvious or noticeable until I replaced the leaking cap. Fuel trims began decreasing immediately. Thanks so much for your emphasis on checking fuel trims. Look at them even when you don't have a code or noticeable performance problem. I credit your advice for fixing a problem I didn't know I had. Bill Caldwell, longtime listener, Charlottesville, Virginia. You know, and he wrote a P.S. P.S., Ron, I replaced the original cat about 5 years ago as the honeycomb broke away and was banging around inside. I took the bad cat to my workplace office as a conversation piece for people to look at and shake. I realized that resolving the recent vacuum cap issue may save me from possibly replacing the cap again. Sure. It's an imbalanced fuel mixture. You're causing the engine to run out of its comfort zone. You're making it work harder, and you're putting that much more emphasis on all the emission controls as well as the engine itself. Some of the things that we've gotten away from, and I blame the diagnostics. I blame how smart cars are today. Some of the things we've gotten away from is using our brain in the sense that we've got no check engine light. There must be nothing wrong with the car. No. You know what? When you go to a doctor... You ever notice you go to a doctor, they always, just about always, take your heart rate, blood pressure, and they ask you some basic questions, and you could be in there for a hangnail, all right? They're always looking at your vitals, and you really have to get in the habit of doing that with cars. Look at the vitals. I don't see how repair shops don't look at vitals. You know, a car comes in for... And this is going to be extreme, but I'll say it. A tire rotation. And the next day, the check engine light pops on. don't you think they're going to come back and, hey, what'd you do to my car? Now, you know, do we check every tire rotation with a scan tool? No, it's impractical. We haven't gotten to that point yet. But we need to think like that. But I'll tell you this, we service a car. We do fuel system cleaning, trans service, coolant service, and so on. Even though it doesn't call for it, we will do a pre and post scan tool data stream analysis. We'll look at the vitals of that vehicle. We'll look to see, you know, number one, I want to see, does the fuel trim change? Number two, I want to see, was the fuel trim close? Was the fuel trim 23 or 24%? It's going to set a fault code at 25. Because I want to know, and does it go down? Listen, I've talked about this in the past couple of months. One of the daughter's cars, the 14 Escape, had positive fuel trim of almost, I think it was 22%. Fault code sets at 25. And I ended up resolving it. I figured out and got into it. It was the crankcase breather. It was a combination of crankcase breather, dirty injectors, and something else that I don't recall, a vacuum line somewhere, that all made a difference in the operating characteristics of that engine, brought the fuel trim down to 9% and dropping. You know, you got to look at vitals. You got to look at the little things. You can't get stuck on, and this is why I read this letter, that, well, my car doesn't have a check engine light, but yet it does this, this, and this. Start to think outside the box. If the check engine light wasn't on the vehicle, how would you diagnose it? You would start to look at fuel. You would start to look at spark. You would start to look at transmission operation. You would start to break each system down. All diagnostics and scan tools do is make it quicker and easier for us to access the information. Doesn't mean the information is not accessible or obtainable on any other method. And sometimes doing a, you know, stick out your tongue and say, check your heart rate and blood pressure. Doing that on a regular basis, I'll tell you what, if you're a repair shop and you're listening to this, think about this. You want to know what ends the conversation about what did you do to my car? You know, I brought it in for an oil change and the next day the check engine light came on. Well, let's see, Mr. Jones, 6 months ago we checked fuel trim when we serviced it and it had a fuel trim of 24%. And my notes say that you weren't interested in looking into it because the light wasn't on. Well, now the light's on. You know what? It ends the conversation in a favorable manner for the repair shop because the customer realizes that it's not related to something you did. Change the way you're looking at cars, whether you're doing it professionally or you're doing it on the weekend. Think outside the box. You'll last longer and you'll last longer fixing cars and you'll get more out of the car, as Bill in Charlottesville found out. So great letter, Bill. I really appreciate it. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Nane, the Car Doctor, here to wind it down this hour. You know, there's a bit of Americana about this radio show. There really is. And I think about it sometimes, you know, how cool it is I get to do this weekend radio show. I always think of my head, this little weekend radio show, right? 140 affiliates, you know, podcast downloads, the whole nine yards. It is kind of fun being me. It's sort of an interesting moment. I love the letters that I get. I love the emails from Bruce. Ron, I drive about 1,000 miles a year. Should I change the oil once a year like I do now? I change it yearly because I'm worried about getting water out of the oil condensation. I agree. I have a 2011 Chevy Malibu 4-banger. Get ready to do the water pump. Anything about this car I should keep an eye on? Yeah, the water pump. I read something about the manifold cracking on these cars. They do. They also get sticky rings, Bruce. And one of the issues I would worry about is it runs a low tension oil ring. Getting clogged up, getting stuck, having oil consumption issues. If it were me, because of the age of the car and what this particular engine is, I would do an oil change once every 6 months. Best quality synthetic oil I could put into it. Make sure you do that. And obviously look at the rest of the fluids. If the rest of the fluids on the car are original, I wouldn't have any problem changing them as well. By now, you should have done coolant at least twice or once, and now it's due for a second time. And clearly, I would do a trans service. I don't know how many miles are on the car, but fluids do fall out of suspension and have issues as they age. So doing it and servicing it on a regular basis wouldn't be the worst idea. But like I said, once every 6 months, just for my peace of mind, because I also want to keep an eye on the older car. And then this letter. This has to be one of the funniest letters I think we've ever gotten. This comes to us from Joe from Cleveland, Ohio. I just spent $150 to replace 20 lug nuts on my wife's 2016 Ford Focus. Here comes the funny part. I had to read this twice because it was like, huh? Is there any way you can get the unemployed engineer on your show who came up with the two-piece lug nut in capital letters? I would also like to get a third-grade student on to explain to the engineer why this idea is not working. Thanks, Ron. I love your show. Joe from Cleveland, Ohio. You know, he's probably right. Maybe the guys that design all the mechanical floors really are unemployed, and that's part of the problem. We don't acknowledge that, too. Keep them coming, folks. I love each and every one of them, and I love to be up here representing you and trying to help you each and every week. You're great, and I enjoy doing it. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Happy to be here, proud to serve. As always, till the next time, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.